Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Really pleased to welcome back Dick Zondag. Dick is president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. He comes by every so often to talk with us about what's going on at Jung's, but more to really answer your questions when you call in. I know we always have lots of plant questions. Dick does an outstanding job of answering those questions, and I certainly hope you'll join in today. If you have some, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Don't forget, you can go to my Facebook page as well. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. And we'll see what we can do for you. Post pictures, too. If you want to post a photo at the Facebook page, I certainly wish you would. And Dick Zondag, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's great to be back.
Great to have you back. And things are going well at Jung's?
Oh, yes. Yeah, things are starting to move. You know, the mail order is always about 6 weeks or 8 weeks ahead of the garden centers, you know. And, yeah, we're processing 5,000 to 8,000 orders a day now, getting them out, and people are getting their seeds started and getting ready for the garden. And you know, we're really, really way ahead of where we were last year at this time, as far as the outside is concerned.
And, is that right?
And there isn't much frost in the ground, and the snow is almost gone. So, you know, there's a lot of people thinking about gardening already.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that number of orders coming in each day for seeds, that's great. What should people keep in mind about their own growing conditions and climate? You think about, you're looking at seed catalogs. You want to make sure you've got a catalog. I mean, of course, yours is right here in Wisconsin, right. And there are some other ones as well, but you want to...
Well, for vegetables and annuals and things like that, it's not as important as it is for your shrubs and trees and your perennials. You want to pick a catalog that has items that are suitable for your area. So, you know, for us it's zone 4, zone 5, but mostly zone 4 plants that are typically very hardy. And then the vegetables that we have in our catalog are suited for short growing seasons. And so, you know, most of them will do very well in a Wisconsin climate.
Absolutely. Well, Chip in Milwaukee has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Chip. Thank you for calling.
Oh, it's my pleasure. One little question. It's Jung or Jung?
It's Jung.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, my grandfather started the business, and they liked the Jung pronunciation, but when we split company with the farm seed division, the horticultural part, the catalogs and the garden centers are known as Jung now, and the farm seed division is Jung Seed Genetics. So.
Okay, now for something more serious. We like to plant a lot of tomatoes, and we always plant plants.
Right.
Are there specific or good seed varieties that we can use? We have a southern-facing patio that stays pretty warm early in the season that we can use instead of going straight to bedding plants?
Yeah, I think the big thing is the maturity of the tomato. If you're starting tomato seeds directly in the soil, you want to have varieties that are early varieties, because if they're a medium or a long-maturing tomato, the tomatoes won't start maturing until the beginning of fall, and then you're not going to get as much of a harvest. So if you're starting them directly in the field, you want to, or in your garden, you want to start with an early variety. I know with the Way Ahead variety, which is a variety that we had in the catalog since we went back into the 20s and found it in some of the 1920s catalogs. It's one that we've had for a long time. When we used to grow those, we would take the seed and plant it right directly in the field, and we'd get a very nice crop of seeds. So starting directly in the soil, you want to start them, use a variety that has a short maturity.
Okay. Well, because we always wondered if we could actually just, because so many other things do well from seed. But,
sure.
But well, most of our tomatoes.
Yeah, the one thing that you could do if you were using tomato seeds is to start the seeds maybe 3 or 4 days, just put them in peat moss or a regular seed starting mix, and get the seed swelling and the little root coming out of the seed before you plant it, so it's actually pre-germinated, and that would also speed up the amount of time that it would stay in the soil.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
We've got one of your heater mats for speeding things up, so we might do that.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Mary in Baraboo, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Mary.
Nice to talk to you. I have several potentillas that I've only lightly pruned in the past several years.
Right.
And I read where you should prune them pretty severely. Can I still do that, and will they come back, or will they just die?
No. Potentillas, spireas, and some of the deciduous plants that blossom in the summertime, you can prune those back to within 6 inches of the ground. And you'll be surprised how fast they come back and how nice they'll look. And if the plant is kind of leggy and you do that, be sure you sort of prune it back as it grows so that it branches well near the ground.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Email from Shannon, who wonders if you'd give some guidelines for a Wisconsin gardener on purchasing nursery stock from a southern nursery, even though the product is labeled hardy to zone 4. What about perennial seeds that are zone 4 hardiness but produced in a southern location? Are they as hardy as the ones produced in the north? Can you count on the hardiness?
If it's a zone 4 plant, most of the time it should do fairly well. The ones that you get into a problem with, the one that I can think of is like Redbud, where they grow from southern Florida to Columbus, Wisconsin. If you get seed from a southern source, it's been selected over a number of generations to suit that particular climate. Now, if it's a vegetatively propagated plant, then it doesn't make any difference where it's grown. If it's has a name to it, like some of the junipers, and there are some nurseries in the south that do grow hardy plants from cuttings, and if they're grown from cuttings, it doesn't matter where the plant is grown, the hardiness will be there. And so with perennials, the same thing. I guess if they're a zone 4 plant, they should do well here.
Okay. Sue in Waupaca. Hi.
Good morning. I have a conundrum with my Brussels sprouts and my cabbages.
Okay.
I'm a longtime gardener. I rotate. I plant my own, or I raise my own cabbages and Brussels sprouts from seed and transplant. And the past at least 2 years, the Brussels sprouts are they head up, they have their little fluffy parts, but they remain fluffy. They don't form a tight head. And I've noticed some of the cabbages, not all, so it's inconsistent, also are not forming nice.
So they don't have a nice solid bud, in other words.
They do not. Any idea?
I guess, have you had the fertility of your garden tested? I mean, do they grow well?
Yeah, they grow well, and I fertilize, and it's the Brussels sprouts have been consistent with the not budding the past 2 years. But the cabbages, the one next to it can be perfect, and then the one next to it just simply doesn't form a head.
Okay, what I would say is maybe you're using a little bit too much nitrogen. Nitrogen can cause a plant to grow very, very fast, but then it also delays the maturity. And so especially with Brussels sprouts, that is a vegetable that you have to have a nice long season for because it doesn't start heading out until September, October.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to overstimulate the plant to grow, so I would back off a little bit. What analysis are you using as far as the fertilizer?
Well, I use well-rotted horse manure and then compost.
Well, that's...
And that should not be high in nitrogen then.
No. And I don't have problems with other crops. As I said, I'm a longtime gardener.
Right.
So I've asked master gardeners, and they said, "Oh, it's the weather." But I don't think it's the weather. I think
what I would do is maybe try a couple different varieties.
There aren't that many varieties of Brussels.
I know Brussels sprouts. Jade Cross is the one that Jade Cross E, and that one seems to have had as good a luck as any. I guess I would try to put it in a spot where you're not adding any fertilizer this year and see if that helps.
Okay.
As far as the cabbage, some of them being, you know, solid and some, that's kind of perplexing.
Yeah, it is. And I had some deprivation, so I had to go out and buy some plants and plant them. And again, they were, some had it up and some didn't. So that points more to the soil, obviously.
Yeah, and you are rotating where they
are. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I do rotate. In fact, I had cabbages planted in three locations. And I observed it at all three locations where it was random.
Is your garden out in the open?
Oh yes, very much.
Not
so.
Not any trees or anything.
No,
around
I don't it. Have I don't have issues with light or anything.
Okay. I guess drop me a line at dick@junkseed.com, and I'll off the top of my head, I really don't know what your problem is, and I'll
do a little research on it.
So just drop me a line at dick@junkseed.com. That's my email address. And then I'll see if I can find something for you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for calling.
Yep. Thanks a lot. Jerome in Platteville, it is your turn. Hi, Jerome.
How do you compare the yield of Honi and Wendy strawberries?
Well, Wendy is a new one that I have.
Yeah, I just got that last year.
Haven't tried personally. I know Honey Eye is the old standard, and that one really produces well.
Yeah, I know. I've had that for years. In fact, 10 years.
Yeah, and so I think that they're similar in maturity. I know that.
Right.
But I just, you know, I haven't had Wendy in my own garden, so I really haven't got a whole lot to base it on. What we do is we have suppliers that produce those and recommend trying them, and so unfortunately I haven't seen them side by side, so I really don't have a whole lot to say about them.
One other question. Do you have any tomatoes that are somewhat resistant to blight?
Are you talking about the late blight or the early blight?
Well,
That wipes out tomatoes is called late blight, and we had trouble with that 2 years ago. We have a variety in the cattle called Mountain Magic, and that does seem to have some resistance to late blight.
Right.
Early blight, I guess you just have to read the descriptions. Most of the hybrid tomatoes will have a little bit more resistance to the blights. The heirlooms, you know, most of those have trouble with the blight.
Yeah.
And so
we rotate in as much as we can in the garden.
Yeah.
We still have that late blight the last 2 years real severely.
Well, one of the things you can use, we do have a product called tomato potato dust. It's called Dragoon's tomato potato dust or something like that, and that has the fungicide. And if you, with the early blight, when you start seeing little light yellow spots on the leaves,
right,
if you use that fungicide, that will stop it where it's at.
Okay. Hmm. Thank
All
you
right.
much.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Amanda Magnus, our on-air producer, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dick Zondag, our guest here on Garden Talk. You can join in with a question by going to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Email us at talk@wpr.org or give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. A Facebook comment from Mary, I bought two pussy willows last year, and they're just starting to sprout their catkins because they're so young. How many of those branches can I put in vases and give to friends?
Pussy willows are very vigorous, and so any of them that have those nice fat catkin buds on can be picked. What I would say, though, is if you want to keep them small, when they start to get the size that you want, take them out of water. Because if you leave them in water through their development, the catkins will expand and the pollen will come out. And so, you know, when they start to show when the leaf or the bud is starting to be shed, just take them out of water and dry them out. And they'll stay at that stage. But you can take those off the plants right now. I mean, as soon as the middle of February, the first part of March now, you can do that because the inhibitors are gone. And from what I understand, we're going to have warm weather next week. So those catkins are going to start to expand.
It's 8 inches of snow today in some parts of Wisconsin, and by Tuesday, I think they were talking 50 degrees in some parts of the state.
It's been so unusual
weird.
This year.
Very weird.
Yeah.
Gail wonders if you would suggest a variety of green pepper. Do you have any that you like?
Well, I think the standard is one called King Arthur. It used to be called Fat and Sassy, but the original name that it was introduced under was King Arthur, and that's a nice, blocky, large, yeah. four-lobed pepper. That one's one of the good ones. There are several others, too. There's one called Juniper that's a really good one. There are several yeah. Nice, sweet peppers. And they're also, I mean, a lot of people are starting to get into hot peppers and semi-hot peppers.
Yeah, so lots of that.
We have a new one in the catalog called Peck a Peck of Peppers. It's a series of three small, they get about 2 inches in size, and you just they're very, very nice to eat from the garden. And some of them are red, yellow, and orange.
Oh!
And they just have a hint of heat. So
I'll have to try one of those this year.
Those are really, really good also. So.
Yeah. Get online and get one ordered. Donna in Elkhorn. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have the catalog, and I noticed that a lot of the tea roses start at zone 6 now.
Yeah.
And I always knew that, and I'm so glad that I think you're the only honest company that actually says they're zone 6 and not zone 5.
Yeah, well, there are ways of getting even zone 6 roses through the winter, but, I mean, roses, do I have to be politically correct? I call roses are blonde plants, you know. If you over-fertilize them in late summer, early fall, or if you overstimulate them to grow, you cut the flowers off of them and stimulate them to grow, they tend to grow too long into the fall and don't go dormant fast enough. And so in the wintertime, they don't have the hardiness. If you stop cutting severely, you know, cutting all the flowers off and that sort of stuff, probably early to mid-August, you can take one off once in a while, but just don't cut them all the time so that it stimulates them to grow. And let them go dormant naturally and don't over-fertilize or over-water them in the fall. And then you just cover them with a 6 or 8 inches of soil and then maybe some marsh hay over that or put these cones around them. Most roses will make it through the winter. I doubt whether there's going to be a lot of roses that will be dead this spring unless we get a really, really cold snap now that plants are really starting to move a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got a lot of rugosas.
Okay.
And those things just, they take over everything.
Yep.
But I was looking for something a little smaller that acted like a tea rose.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the shrub roses are mainly planted for their color. You know, the flowers themselves are not like the tea rose where you get that huge bud and then you can cut it. Most of them have multiple flowers on a head. And the nice thing about most shrub roses is that if you do prune them back and they get another flush of growth, they'll get another set of flowers. And so the knockout roses have just kind of taken over the shrub rose area. But we've got a couple of new ones called Iconic. There's a pink one and a red one that are very pretty. But if you want those flowers that you cut and bring in the house, the tea roses are the ones to use.
No,
go ahead.
What do you think about planting them really deeply? Would that help?
Well, I always plant mine so that the graft union is about 2 inches below the ground, and that way if they do die back to the ground, you've got some of the rows to come back from. But on the other hand, too, if they die back to the ground, they usually don't come back very strongly either, and you don't get much of a bush out of them that year.
Okay.
So I guess I've gone, not completely away from that, but, because roses are really inexpensive for me, I plant them with the graft union above ground now. And if some of them die, then I have room to put some of the newer varieties in every year.
So. that's good planning. I'll try that. Thank you.
I like that approach.
I have a distinct advantage there. We also have a test garden for our roses in the front of our store in Randolph. We have about 85 or 90 varieties where we plant a couple of each. And what we actually do is we put them in plastic pots, big plastic pots, and then we put that pot in a pot that we buried in the ground, and then we put trickle irrigation on them. So we just make them grow like crazy, and so they're always in bloom. And so that way there are always flowers to pick. And then if they live through the winter, it doesn't make any difference because we put new ones in every year because we want to see. You know, we have a catalog called Edmund's Roses. That's one of our family of catalogs that specializes in hybrid teas. And so, you know, it has a real deep offering of roses. And so my dad always loved roses. And so he kind of brought us up with roses in the yard. So roses are one of my favorite flowers.
And by the way, just stopping, I always enjoy stopping at Randolph at your store and your place there. It's really, really fun.
Yeah, we try to have things around it that, you know, you can see what you're buying, you know, sort of in a mature state. We have a water feature that we put in when we put our Centennial Park up, and now we've got that rose garden out there. We're going to add shrub roses this year to the park so we can have, you know, a display of the knockouts. And it's getting now so people don't want to use as much pesticides, you know, the fungicides and the insecticides that you need to use on hybrid teas. And so a lot of the newer shrub roses are black spot resistant. And so you can just plant them and they're hardy, so you don't have to replace them very often. And so we're going to put some of those in the back part of that garden. And so we're going to have a lot of roses to look at.
Speaking of looking at, we'll be looking at some roses and a whole lot of other flowers as well in early July, because we're going on a trip to England to see the English gardens and attend the Hampton Court Flower Show. So, we'll visit, and this is with Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. We're going to visit some of the great churches and houses along with the gardens. We're going to see the cathedrals at Leeds and Canterbury and visit the White Garden at Sackville West at Bateman's House, which is the wooded retreat of Rudyard Kipling. So we'll be at that Hampton Court Flower Show and a whole bunch more. And I just to mention that it's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be on that trip with Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. You can go, too, if you want to. Just go to WPR.org/travel, and you can find out more about it. But it's July 1st through the 9th. So,
yeah,
be in England.
England is a very unusual place. I mean, I haven't been in England for a long time, but we visited many of the gardens over there, and they seem to be able to grow sun plants and shade plants right next to each other. And so, they really,
amazing.
I mean, they just, their gardens are amazing over there.
And the garden styles are, you know,
yeah,
different.
I mean,
from
it's just very formal. Some of them are very formal. And then you run into some of the cottage gardens that are just, you know, just beautiful, how they put things together and how things that in Wisconsin don't grow together very well, they grow together there. So England is a beautiful country.
And it'll be a lot of fun. And Jolie, let's see, Cronenwetter,
Hello.
You there? Hi, Jolie.
Yes, I am. I have two questions to ask. One is, and a lady was talking about manure, what is the best type of animal manure to use in your garden?
The best type of animal manure to use in your garden is some that hasn't got weed seed in it. Most manures will do just fine. I'm actually taking care of a couple of my daughter's dogs that she's in Thailand for a year, and so I have actually been throwing the dog poop that we pick up in the backyard into the compost pile. Hopefully,
and composting it.
Composting it, yeah. The big thing with cow manure and some of the ruminous animal manures is to make sure that you're not getting manure that has weed seed in it, because, and it should sit around in the yard If you can get into a farmer that's had some manure sitting around for a year or two, that's actually the best kind of manure because that has broken down and most of the nitrogen has been released in the form of ammonia that vaporizes. And so all you really have left are the soil building components. So you get a lot of organic matter that you add to the soil.
Okay, so even horse manure.
Horse manure
would be
fine.
Great, yeah.
But if you're
it
adding,
needs to sit a year.
Yeah, if you're adding fresh horse manure, you know, go a little easy because then you've got a lot of nitrogen in it. And if you add too much fresh manure, you can have the same problem if you use too much nitrogen from a chemical fertilizer. The plants will grow like crazy. You know, you'll have the prettiest looking garden as far as leaves are concerned, but the carrots will be small, the tomatoes will be late, it tends to screw up the part that you need. So
okay, great.
There you
Thank
go.
You.
Thanks a lot for calling. Judy in Stevens Point. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi there. You were just talking about weed seeds coming in manure and compost, and
right.
I was given a gift of compost or composted manure, and I have never had so many weeds. They're choking out everything. I am calling because I've heard of a product called corn gluten. I know nothing about it, how this material comes and when you put it on, and what do you think about effectiveness of trying something like that?
Okay, corn gluten is a byproduct of the corn, you know, processing, and it does inhibit weeds that come from seed. Now, if you've got quackgrass in that, that's already established, and thistles, and anything, any weed that comes from a root, corn gluten isn't going to do a whole lot.
Nothing, pretty essentially.
Yeah, right. And so if you prepare, you know, if you've got an area that's free of weeds, and then you plant your garden and let your garden come up, because if you put corn gluten on your garden right after you've seeded, it's going to kill your vegetable seeds too.
Oh, yeah.
It's a non-selective germination inhibitor is what it is. A lot of people, if they want to use it, if they want to control crabgrass in their lawn, they'll use corn gluten sometimes, but it gets to be pretty expensive to do that too. But corn gluten is a germination inhibitor.
Okay. So I could, like on my raised beds, I could plant my garden, and once it comes up, I could use corn gluten.
Yep, once it comes up, you have to clean up the weeds that are there also.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you treat with the corn gluten. And what I always tell people when they're trying something new is leave an area that you don't treat, because there will always be some escapes, even when you're using chemicals, you know. And so you want to see whether that product is actually working or not. And so if you leave an area that you don't treat as sort of a check, you'll see whether the product that you're using is working or not.
Mm-hmm. And how does this product come? Is it a powder or is it a liquid?
It comes in 50-pound bags, actually, or 25-pound bags. It's a relatively high-volume substance because it's the gluten part of the seed. You know, it's a part that's a discard from, I think, making corn sugar.
Okay. And does Young's carry the product?
We have it in some of our stores, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And a lot of times, depending on the size of the garden, if you can mulch, I always mulch my garden.
Yeah, and mulches really work good, too. I mean, they do several different things. But the one thing with mulching your garden, you want to make sure that the soil is warm before you mulch, because a mulch tends to, it's like insulation, it keeps things where they are. So you have to wait until the soil is warmed up, but you let your garden come up, and then you clean up the weeds, and then you mulch. And that mulch will eventually break down, and it adds organic matter to the soil.
Great.
So it's a really good thing to do. So, you know, last year's leaves or grass clippings, if you're not treating for your weeds and stuff like that. So
it was always great.
Takes a lot of work out of it.
Oh, it eliminates a lot of work. Dave in Dane County, hi.
Hey, hi, guys. I was reading, I think it was Birds and Blooms, about an article about lettuce.
Great.
And most people grow lettuce, you know, to eat the foliage, but they suggested let your lettuce bolt and the finches and the birds just come like crazy for the seeds. And would you know off chance which varieties of seed you think would produce the most seed when you would let them bolt? They have suggested, you know, put a couple of patches in your other, you know, in your perennial gardens and such, and then leave some in your garden. And if you can't, you know, think about it now, maybe I could email you and ask that later. But
sure,
you know,
but no, I can tell you that.
Would go to the seeds, would seed the most seed?
Yeah. what I would suggest is using the leaf lettuce varieties.
Okay.
Because those tend to bolt faster.
Yep.
And
yep.
The earlier you plant it, I mean, bolting happens when a plant reaches maturity. And so the quicker you get that seed planted, put it under a little bit of stress. Don't fertilize it and don't water it. Stress will cause a plant to start bolting, and that's what I would do. I would start with the leafy lettuces first, and we have several blends of leaf lettuce in the catalog, and that's what I would start with.
What are some of the names of
The Kaleidoscope mix has a lot of the leaf lettuces.
Kaleidoscope.
Yeah, and there's an heirloom mix also that has a lot of good leaf lettuce varieties.
Cool.
Yeah, it sounds neat. The article or the little blurb in the magazine sounded like the birds just...
Yeah, really that's something new that I mean,
that's cool.
Yeah, I first time I've heard of that.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it very much. There might probably be some other Wisconsin Public Radio listeners doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. And by the way, you can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Gary and Rhinelander, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi there, guys. Hey, I'm a big sandwich eater, and I love tomatoes.
Okay.
And I just moved to a new place up here in Rhinelander, and there's a garden, which I really didn't know what's grown in there from the previous owner, but it's all fenced in with wire fencing. And I'm wondering what is a good variety or what seed to start growing for like a beefsteak type tomato as an at least a very large tomato.
Okay. The one variety that comes to mind was an All-American a few years ago called Big Beef. That one is one of our biggest selling varieties, not only in the junk catalog but in the Totally Tomatoes catalog. Another one that's really good, but maybe a little bit smaller than that, is Celebrity. That far north, you really want to put in some early tomatoes, too. And I want to put in a plug, Larry, if that's okay.
Sure.
Next weekend, I'm going to be in Minocqua.
Oh, cool.
Doing the same thing. The master gardeners in that area are putting on a seminar. It's called Gardening Northwood Style.
Oh, and wonderful.
So it's going to be at the Lakeland High School, I think. I should have wrote that down, but I didn't. But it's at,
well, there's Lakeland High School. I know right where it is in Minocqua.
And so, you know, if you want to come out, I know they've got the square foot gardener and they've got somebody talking on herbs. What I'm going to be doing is basically what we're doing today, just taking questions from the gardeners.
Man,
and so
that's great.
That should be a lot of fun.
I do have one other question.
Sure.
Okay.
I do like to grow flowers as well, and I was thinking about some kind of a vine and to grow onto this, on this fencing.
Okay.
And some kind of flowering vine, maybe something which is probably very hard to do that deer won't eat.
Oh, yes.
That's hard to do.
Morning glories is one of that comes to mind. I mean, they grow very vigorously.
Okay.
The big thing with morning glories, because they have a very hard seed coat, is to soak them in warm water with a little bit of vinegar in it, at least overnight or maybe a couple days until that seed starts to swell. Because especially if they go into cold soil, it takes a while for that seed coat to get broken down. So morning glories would be one thing. There are several. Sweet Susan vine. There's a canary vine. There are a lot of annual vines that can be used. I guess what you'd have to do is go online or you drop me a line as far as the deer tolerance.
Okay.
Very few plants that deer won't eat if they're hungry.
Yeah.
Do you think that when it comes to seeds that you should always pre-germinate?
Well, if you're careful with it so that you don't get them too far along when you put them in the ground. But, yeah, I mean, pre-germinating seeds before you plant them, especially if they're going in cold soil, will get them out of the ground quite a bit faster.
Yeah, makes a difference.
A day or so in a warm spot or being soaked so that the seed imbibes the water will hasten germination.
Thanks, Gary, for calling. And Dennis in Rice Lake, hello to you.
Hello. I'm in Little Rice.
Little Rice, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Say, a friend gave me several chestnuts, and he got them from the Wausau area.
Okay.
And I would like to know how to germinate them.
Chestnuts also have a very hard seed coat, and so what you want to do is take a file and at least file through it. Now, you don't want to get way into the seed, but that way they can imbibe some seed. And unfortunately, I think that chestnut has a dormancy requirement. So if it were fall, what you do then is you just take it and put it in either sand or moist peat moss so that it can take up some water, and then put it in a cold refrigerator over winter so that the seed after ripens. You can do the same thing by putting it in the ground, but I don't think chestnut will germinate until it gets a cold treatment.
Yeah, well, I've had it in my refrigerator for 2.5 months now. So
well, the problem is, though, it's got to imbibe that water before it will, before the inhibitors will be overcome. So,
I'll do what I can.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you a lot.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling. Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company. Having a great time talking with him. Certainly, if you have questions, you may join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment or even a photo there. And speaking of Facebook, Caitlin sent us a note. Let's see, where is that note? She sent us a note about, here it is. Never had a good luck with cucumbers, so this year we thought we'd try planting some in 5-gallon buckets. After looking through Jung's catalog, we decided on Diamond Hybrid. I'm planning on starting the seeds under grow lights. Any tips for growing this cucumber in a bucket and then up a trellis?
That sounds like a good idea. I mean, the soil you should use in a container situation should have a lot more organic matter. I mean, you wouldn't want to just take soil out of your garden and fill your container with it. So what we use in the greenhouse is a third sand, a sharp sand, a coarse sand, a third peat moss, and then a third soil. Or if you really want to make it a lightweight mix, you can go to the garden centers and pick up a 25 cubic foot bag of a peat-based container soil. Mm-hmm. And then to that, you know, with cucumbers, what I would do is add maybe a slow-release fertilizer like Osmocote. And what that is, it's a fertilizer that has plastic around it. And so every time you water the plant or water the soil, some of that fertilizer is leached out of the out of that plastic prell and will give the plant some fertilizer. And the thing that you'll find with growing them in a container is they'll be hanging. And so the cucumbers tend to be straighter, and I think cucumbers are one of the things that you can do a pretty good job in containers. Now, you want to pick bush-type varieties. They're called bushes because they don't get vines that grow to be 8, 10, 12 feet long. They only get it's a determinate vine of about 3 to 4 feet, and those are excellent for containers because that way you don't get so much vine that it makes the pot top-heavy and tip over.
We have Chris and O'Connell had called but couldn't stay on the line. Is it feasible to grow iceberg lettuce in the Green Bay area?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
If you want to grow a nice heading lettuce, because lettuce grows mainly in the cool part of the seasons, you'll want to start the seed like you'd start a cabbage plant. That way it'll mature and start growing in the spring cool season, and then it'll mature early in the summer. Or the other thing you can do is start it like in mid-July, and then the head will mature in the fall. So it's not impossible to grow a nice heading lettuce in your climate.
Mary in Eau Claire, hello.
Hi. I have an area of my garden that gets a lot of morning sun, but midday it's shaded by the house. I would like to grow vegetables there. What kind of vegetables would you recommend for that kind of partial shade area?
Boy, unfortunately, I think most vegetables that you grow are, they like to have full sunlight. Now, if they've got morning sunlight till, you know, a noon or better, it's a lot better than having all afternoon light, because the plants will tend to dry off and you'll have much less problem with disease. So I think what I would do is start with, you know, the early maturing varieties like your early tomatoes and peas and things like that. But I, there really are no vegetables that I know of that are more shade tolerant than others, or varieties within a vegetable that are more shade tolerant.
No.
Okay, so that's really not the answer that I wanted, but okay.
Well, sorry about that. You know, you know, most vegetables are bred for, you know, full sunlight.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, if you get
I have one other question, if I may.
Sure.
But if you do use, like, plastic buckets for growing container plants, how much drainage do you need to give them?
You need to give, you know, you need to have holes in the bottom so that the soil does not get waterlogged. Because if the plants are sitting, the roots are sitting in water all the time, they tend to get soil disease or root rot diseases. And so, you know, with big containers, you want to have enough holes so that the excess water does have a chance to drain out.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, yep. Thanks for calling. And Vicki in Menominee, hi.
Good morning. We enjoy your show so much, and we're really enjoying this guest. We've got a question for you. We are used to planting potatoes in May, early May, and we've heard recently that if you plant after July the 4th, that you can avoid potato bugs. We've had
And because you're breaking up so badly, I'm going to stop right there, Vicki, because I can barely hear you. But the question, and this is, I've heard this too, planting potatoes after July 1st to eliminate the bug issue.
The problem is that you're not going to get a very heavy yield. I mean, you'll get some potatoes, and there again, you want to plant the early maturing varieties, but there are organic pesticides, the potato, tomato, I mean, there's a Colorado potato beetle beater, say that fast, right? That is actually a bacterium that kills the Colorado potato beetle. It has BT in it, and so that's one of the ways that you can prevent the or you can control the potato beetles that defoliate the plants is to, you know, probably in mid-June or in that area when the beetles start coming, you can treat with that Colorado potato beetle beater, and that will control the beetles.
Let's turn to Daisy in Caledonia. Hi, Daisy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show. I think it's the best. I just want to say congratulations on the job that you're doing.
Thank you.
The question that I have is I purchased strawberries a couple years ago. I purchased maybe two plants, and they spread all around my garden. When I purchased them, the fruits were sweet and big. But as after a couple years, the fruits are very small and they're sour. Does that have anything to do with the soil? And what can I do to perhaps to get better fruits?
It may be a little bit to do with the soil, but what happens with strawberries is they get viruses. And what happens is leafhoppers will feed on a virus-infected plant, and then they jump over into your plants and and then they start feeding on those plants, and they inject their saliva into the plant, and the virus is carried into the plant. And then the virus is what causes the plant, the berries, to get smaller and less sweet. So what you want to do is get new plants every, I don't know, 6 to 8 years, I guess, depending on how the plants are. How do the plants themselves look?
Well, the leaves, they seem smaller, and you know, you have these wild strawberries. It seems like somehow they kind of got mixed with. So right now, I don't know which one's the original plant that I have, because I have so many.
Okay.
The leaves are smaller.
Have you tried fertilizing the plants?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and it doesn't make any difference.
No, it didn't.
Then what I would say is to pick a spot in your garden and get some new plants.
Okay.
From, you know, from, well, from Chung's, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, we purchase our plants from nurseries that grow them from virus-indexed plants so that they're one generation from virus-free. And so they tend to be much more vigorous, and they have bigger berries on them. Commercial producers will not fruit strawberries more than 3 or 4 years, and then they plow them under and plant new plants because of the virus.
So would you suggest that it's actually better to grow strawberries in containers instead of on the garden?
No. No, if you grow them in containers, you have to use varieties that are day neutral or the ever-bearing varieties. Now, if you want a lot of strawberries, you grow them in the garden.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much for calling. And we actually had Kat Facebook us send a message on Facebook, and that just related to dog and cat feces, not recommended as an additive to compost bins when it's going to be used in a vegetable garden, unless you have a very hot compost. You have a risk of pathogens being passed along on your vegetables. That could outweigh the benefit. So,
could be.
Yep. So worth making that point. And then Mike in Waukesha, you have a question. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Morning. I got a question. Going to have to cut down some pine trees that are between my house and my neighbors, and makes a nice windbreak and don't have to look at their house.
Right.
I'd like to replace them with arborvitae, but I'm probably going to need 15 or 20 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any that grow fast? Any varieties?
The variety that we like for windbreaks is called a Techne arborvitae. It's a little bit more tolerant of wind. It still gets a little brown in the winter, but it tends not to burn as badly as the normal pyramidal arborvitae. So the Techne is what we recommend. And so you plant them depending on the size that you start with. If you're starting with a 36-inch tall plant, you can plant them about 4 feet apart. We have smaller ones, too, available in the garden centers, but it depends on the size that you want. And then when they get to the size that you want them to be, then what you do is you get in to the top of the arborvitae and you cut it back into the brown wood, and that will tend to stunt the height. If you don't do that, you're probably going to end up with a 12 to 15 foot hedge that's about maybe 3 to 4 feet wide.
Hmm.
And I've seen some where they look like they stagger them. Instead of planting them in a solid row, they zigzag them?
It depends on how much space you have, yeah. You can do it that way, or you can plant them right in a straight row. Mine, I have that behind my house, and they're in a straight row.
And it was Technia?
Techne. It's T-E-C-H-N-E-Y.
N-E-Y.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Well, appreciate listening to your show on Fridays.
All right. Jerry in Milwaukee wonders, how long should you soak sugar snap peas prior to planting them?
Overnight is enough. I mean, if it's warm water, all you really want with peas is to have the seeds start to swell a little bit. You put them in the soil and they'll pop right out.
And then Shannon wonders, when planting a potted plant, in particular a shrub or tree, should I take into account the path of the sun and how it may affect the direction of plant growth?
No. No. Most plants will adapt to the situation they're in. The big thing with planting plants from a container is to make sure that you either cut into the root ball an inch deep on four sides so that the roots blast out of that pot area, because if you don't, they just keep circling the plant and eventually girdle it. So you want to at least cut into the root ball, or you just rake the roots right out from the ball from the edge so that when you put the tree in the ground, the roots do blast out of that ball and get into the native soil.
And it really
but other
is.
Than that, the orientation, I mean, if the plant was a little bit crooked, you'd want to plant the plant leaning to the north, because then it'll bend back towards the sun. But
otherwise,
in most cases, you want to plant the nicest side towards the side where most people see it.
Dick Zondag, our guest, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company, Randolph, Wisconsin. Lots of callers online and emailers and people on our Facebook page here with questions for you, Dick. Let's go to Debbie, who had a Facebook comment. I want to start a variety of seeds indoors in our sunroom, but I won't be using grow lights. What would be a good date to start these? I have started some indoors before, and they seem to get weak and limp before I put them into the ground. Comments.
Okay, if you're growing plants in a situation where they have less than optimum light, you also want to cut back on the fertilization that you do, on the temperature that they're grown at, so that you don't push them, because if you do, you get leggy plants. So, and spacing, you want to space them out so that they have more space. Now, having leggy plants is not a bad issue. You just want to plant them a little deeper when you plant them out. The other thing that you want to do as far as starting, the time that you start them, you maybe want to, if they're too leggy, you want to start them a little later. What I'd recommend for this person is to have a notebook and note down when you start certain things, and when you plant them out, you note whether they were too big or too small, whether you want to set your date a little earlier. I would think things like petunias, maybe eggplants, peppers, things like that could be started pretty soon. In another 2 weeks, then you'd start things like tomatoes and your cabbage and cauliflower, things that start a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But then keep a notebook, because, you know, I can tell you when we start them in the greenhouse in Randolph, but there we have optimum light. We push them because
right.
we put fertilizer in the water every time we water them, and we also have a lot of humidity and sunlight. So, you know, we have optimum growing. So keep a notebook. Use bottom heat on, you know, use a heating pad to start them on so that they come up real fast. And then use a starting mix type soil to get them started, because that will keep you away from damping off. And then when you transplant them, then you can use a third sand, a third garden soil, a third peat moss, or a regular potting mix.
Had a listener call one time. This is several years back, but she did an experiment, and now she did it all the time. She once the plants were up, some plants whenever she walked by them, she sort of ran her hand over them and moved them around a little bit. She actually experimented, didn't do it with some of the other ones, and the ones that she moved and kind of bushed around, They were sturdy.
Stockier, right?
They were a little stockier. So she actually...
What you're doing there is kind of mimicking what happens to them outside when you have wind. You know, that... And again, if you're growing your own vegetables, it's a good idea to take them outside for a few days before you transplant them so that they get out in the wind.
Yeah.
And they get out in the regular temperature and humidity so that when they do finally hit the soil, that they're a little more acclimated. So, yeah, moving them with your hand is not a bad thing.
James in Vernon County, we'll turn to you now. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm interested in planting some yews, and I would like to have them mature into trees as opposed to hedges. So any advice on varieties or culture would be great.
Well, yews normally, I mean, how tall of a tree do you want?
Oh, it doesn't matter, really.
Well, a yew is going to give you, you know, you want to use the upright yew if you're trying to grow them tall, and it'll look more like a Christmas tree than a shade tree.
Okay.
But you want to use like what's called an upright yew, and then you just trim it to in the shape that you want. And if you're going to let the if you're going to want to let the plant grow to a large size, then you are going to find that the bottom limbs will start dropping off, as most evergreens do.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Steve in Milwaukee. Hello.
No, I'm sorry. I had to get you off the speakerphone there.
Okay.
I didn't catch the whole show, so I hope you haven't covered this. I every year in our garden, no matter where we plant them, we seem to get what I believe is a blight of some type on our tomatoes, where, you know, you start getting spotting on the leaves and such as the season goes along, and then the kind of, you know, the plant gets progressively weaker and such, and you know, and then it starts to affect the fruit as well.
Right.
And we were really, really careful last year with watering, literally just putting the hose down on the ground to make sure the leaves didn't get wet and such.
Right.
And we tried to pinch off some of the, what do they call, leaders, I believe?
The suckers, yeah.
Oh, suckers, that's it, thanks. And we still got it.
Okay, well, early blight is something that you really have a hard time avoiding, no matter how you treat, and most tomatoes are pretty susceptible to it. Although, if you read the description, it'll say whether it's tolerant of early blight or that sort of thing. The secret to keeping early blight away is to use a variety that has some tolerance to it. Plant them in an area where they get early morning sunlight so that the leaves dry off, because the way that diseases start in plants is the spores are there. They germinate in the dew, and if the little germ tube called the haustoria gets out of that spore and into the leaf before the dew dries off, you've got the disease. The other thing that you can do, too, is make sure when your plants are done that you either bury the, you know, the remains or somehow get them away, because a lot of the early blight will overwinter in the organic, you know, in the leaves and the stems that you had from last year's crop.
What is it okay to compost those leaves?
It is, but the best way to compost them is to dig a hole and bury them, to trench compost them.
Okay.
Put a little fertilizer.
Don't mix that in on my tumbler at all.
No.
No.
No, what I would do is dig a trench, put a little bit of chemical fertilizer on top of them, and then bury them.
Okay.
They probably take a couple of years to compost them, but that way you're at least composting them. But then those leaves are not out in the air where the spores of the disease can get out and infect your new plants.
Okay. Can I make that compost? Could I put that in my garden if I just go deep enough?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a problem. Once the leaves are and the stems are composted, then the disease does not live in the soil. It lives on the plant material. So you want to get rid of the plant material. And if a plant is really badly infected, I think I would even hide it in your garbage.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, burn it. Yeah, that'd be another thing.
Well,
you
I
can
live
do
in the city. I can't do that. But I can, yeah, we do that sometimes where we sneak some into the garbage. I know we're not supposed to, where I bagged them and such when it was particularly bad.
Yeah. But and the other thing is, be sure you watch for the blight, because the blight starts as a yellowing of spots on the leaves, and there are fungicides that you can get that you can spray on the plant that will stop it where it's at.
Well, we're trying to kind of do an organic thing, so that's a little problem for us.
Yeah. Okay. All right. There you go. Thank you for calling. And see, we have a email question here from Pat in La Crosse. I planted a clematis on a split rail fence near a spruce tree and in a small space bordering a driveway that in the past years has bloomed beautifully, but now it's very few blossoms. When's a good time to move this plant, and how should I go about doing this? It's a species called Ramona, and it was a beautiful blue-violet color.
Ramona is
beautiful. They're really pretty, yeah.
The best time to move them is in early spring, as soon as the soil is thawed and the excess moisture is moved through before the plant really starts to grow a lot. And then you just want to dig the plant and take as much soil as you can with it. And then when you transplant it, be sure you put a little extra lime in the soil because clematis like to have a very sweet soil.
So
that's what I would do to move a clematis.
And Doris in Shawano County started four stevia seeds last year at two different times following your directions, but not one came up. Started them indoors on small pots. Any ideas? I really hope the few remaining seeds will give me a plant this time around.
Maybe germinate them on a paper towel. You know, put the seeds on a paper towel. Roll that paper towel up, put it in a plastic bag, and put it in a warm spot in your house, and then just keep unrolling the paper toweling and seeing if the seed germinates. If it germinates, then you can put it into a potting soil or a seed starting soil and grow your plant from that.
Sherry emailed us from Madison, live near a lake, have a newer home, trying to establish plantings. Very poor results with evergreens, and she thinks it might be a high water table problem. Could that be the case? If so, is there a kind of variety that will tolerate those conditions? I'd like to have some green in the winter.
Yeah. If it is a high water table, I think the yews are the most water tolerant, but I don't think that they're really water tolerant. You know, I guess the thing I would do is dig a hole and see if water accumulates in the bottom of the hole, and if it does, you may want to try one or two just to see if they work. But you know, if your water table is that high, it probably isn't going to. But if it doesn't, if the hole, you dig a hole and there isn't water in the bottom of the hole, then I would think yews would work fairly well.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's like a 2 foot hole or something.
Right, right.
Yeah, we had our lake home 4 feet down exactly is mm-hmm. where you hit water.
Right.
But you could get some things to grow.
And what you'd want to do then is maybe put some sand or something that drains really easily. Mix a lot of that in with the soil so that the water drains away as fast as possible.
Yeah. Paul in Powers, Michigan. Hello, thank you for calling.
I have a question about strawberries.
Okay.
I planted strawberries about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And last year, I had the most strawberries of all the years that I've been tending them.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering, how long will those strawberries last?
It depends on how you take care of them.
Well, I've been trying to take care of them. I don't have rows anymore.
Right. I mean, you probably got matted rows.
Right.
What you do to renovate a strawberry patch is when you get a matted row, what happens is the strawberries tend to become weeds to themselves. They get too many plants per square foot, and so none of them have enough water or nutrients or sunlight. And so what we recommend is once you get a matted row, what you want to do is after the plants are done fruiting, take your lawnmower and set it as high as you can and catch the leaves as you're cutting them off. And then where you planted the original mother plants, you take a rototiller and just till it up.
Okay.
And you leave about maybe an 18-inch row of plants behind, you know, so that you have new plants to run into the spot where you have the rototilled,
right.
And that way you'll renovate the plants. And then fertilize them with a well-balanced fertilizer,
do the fertilizing then?
As soon as you've got the rototilling done and you want the plants to start growing.
Okay.
And you usually do this like in late June, early July, after the
flush.
After the fruit is done and then before the runners start to run, because what happens is when the fruit gets done, then the plants start running again.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So,
well, we had so many strawberries last year, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And we didn't have any blossoms at the beginning, and I thought, well, maybe I'm not going to get anything. Well, then they blossomed. And yeah, we had so many strawberries.
That's a good problem.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have.
Thanks a lot for calling, Paul. Nicholas sent us a Facebook note. Is it too late to hit my apple trees with a baseball bat in order to get the results, to get good results this coming year?
Yeah, you got to do that in June after the plants have started to grow. The flowers for this year were laid down in August and September of last year. So, I mean, you can go out and hit it with a baseball bat, and if they flower, it's not because you hit it with a baseball bat.
Okay.
So what I would do is, you know, wait and see once, because sometimes when you threaten them, they see you coming and they'll throw out those flowers. But if you have no flowers, you either girdle them a little bit with a sharp knife, or you hit them with a pipe or a baseball bat to break up some of the connective tissue, and the next year they'll flower.
Donna says she just purchased an unheated greenhouse, hopefully to get a head start on her vegetable garden and new perennials from seed. When can I set my seedlings into the greenhouse? Wisconsin Zone 5A, she says.
I would think, you know, when the temperature in the greenhouse in the daytime, you know, reaches at 70 or 80 degrees.
Yeah.
And then what you want to do, if you're not putting any extra heat into the greenhouse, throw a sheet or something over the plants at night just to make sure if it does get down below freezing that you don't get the plants frozen, because a sheet will tend to keep the heat that's stored up in the soil that they're growing in around the plants, and they won't freeze. So I would think, you know, maybe in 3 weeks or so, depending on how the weather goes. I mean, the weather this year has been so screwed up that...
Who knows? Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be 50 degrees next week,
maybe
so...
it's next week, right?
Oh, man. Steve in Fargo. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hey, I've got a just installed a 4-foot chain link fence around my backyard, and I was wondering what kind of shrub or annual flower you'd recommend to sort of cover over that fence and obscure it a little bit.
You're looking for an annual, or you're looking for something that'll be there year after year?
I'm looking for something that'll be there year after year, but I wouldn't be opposed to planting an annual this spring. Is it like a morning glory vine or something?
Morning glories, cardinal vine. There are a lot of different vines, but I'm not sure that they will go to seed in your area. You know, that they'll get started and they'll be long enough there. You know, some of the annual vines will just keep coming up year after year, but it's not because they have anything alive over the winter other than the seed. So,
right. What about annuals then?
You mean shrubs?
I mean perennials, shrubs, yeah.
There are the clematis is one thing you could use. Grapevines do very well. You could use some of the ivies, Boston ivy or Engelmann's ivy. You know, there are a bunch of, there's some honeysuckles, a gold flame honeysuckle. So there are several different vines that you could use. Bittersweet is another one that would cover up a fence during summertime, and then the leaves disappear for the winter.
Now, the second part of my question, I was thinking about replanting some oak trees that are down in my gully, but I want to bring them up and put them in the sun and get them up closer to the house. How high of a, can you dig out a 4-foot or 5-foot baby oak tree, and what's the possibility of replanting something like that?
Yeah, I think when you get to 5 feet, they're going to be a pretty deep taproot. The problem with oaks is they have a taproot, and if you hit that taproot too hard, especially with the pin oak family, they don't like to come back. Some of the red oaks and swamp red oak and some of those will do okay, but you're getting 5 feet, you're probably getting an inch or a little better. You got to dig down as deep as you can and take as much of that taproot with you, and that all I can tell you, you know.
Hope for the best.
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Lynn in Evansville, it's your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, my home is located on a small lot where my driveway is immediately adjacent to that of my neighbors.
Okay.
So we were thinking about, well, I was thinking about primarily what I might do to afford some privacy for both of us. And I don't want to put up a stockade fence. It's too unfriendly. Right. But I've seen photos of someone who put potted bamboo along the edge. And, you know, the height, the leaf texture was interesting. But I had heard that it's not winter tolerant here. Is there something that you might recommend as a substitute that would work here?
And how narrow a strip is it?
Oh, a couple feet.
Yeah, that's really hard. And there's concrete on both sides?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess email me and I'll see if there is something. You're right, bamboo is not. I mean, there are some hardy bamboos, but they can get pretty weedy too. So send me an email and I'll see if I can think of something that might work in that situation. Getting something that's annual and will get high enough to give you privacy is pretty difficult.
So it's dick@junkseed.com?
Yeah, dick@junkseed.com.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks for calling.
Judy and Boaz. Hi.
Hi. I just love your show.
Thank you.
I'm fairly new at Serious Gardening, and I have a question. I hope it's not silly. I'm wondering, I like to put my vining plants at the edges of the garden, the crazy viners like the squash and pumpkins. And I'm going to do squash, pumpkins, and watermelon and cantaloupe. And I'm wondering if I plant those to get, you know, next to each other on, say, the squashes on one side of the far end of the garden and the fruits on the far end of the other side, if they will have problems cross-pollinating and get some sort of weird squash pumpkin thing, or is that something you need to worry about, or should those be separated?
No, they're fine. The taste and the fruit that you get from a vine crop is determined by the seed you plant. Now, if you saved seed, you might get something very unusual.
You know?
But if you're buying new seed each year, the sweetness and the shape and whatever you're getting is determined by the seed you put in the ground, and not by the pollen that cross-pollinates the vine.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for calling. And I'm just looking through my notes here, Dick, and I got something from Chris Cozen, who says was reminding about the Lakeland Gardeners in Minocqua sponsoring the annual Gardening Northwoods style conference, which you were talking about earlier. It's on March 10th, and it's at the Lakeland Union High School in Minocqua. And the speakers, Victoria Boudman, who will be talking from the Square Foot Gardening Foundation. So she'll be talking about square foot gardening. And then you're going to be there, and you're going to do question and answers kind of like what we do here.
I think that's what it is. I'll bring some stuff along in case there are no questions. But, you know, usually we don't have much dead air space here. So
no.
Should
be a lot of fun.
Have some seed germination hints and things like that. But, you know, they just basically wanted me to come and answer questions, so.
You'll do it.
That's what I'm going to do.
March 10th, and their website is gardeningnorthwoodstyle.com, gardeningnorthwoodstyle.com. So there you go, and thanks so much. We'll look forward to your next visit, Dick. Thank you very much. Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.